Okay, I'm Stephanie and I'm an alcoholic. And I am so out of my comfort zone right now. Probably going to knock this thing over. So what it was like, I didn't start drinking until I was 18 because I didn't want to have it fall back on my parents. So if I was 18 and I got in trouble, I would be the one that would have to deal with it. So I waited till I was 18, but either way, it didn't really, I could take it or leave it. And then when I was 19, I got married, and I was young, and I was wound tight. I was stressed. And so I was a nervous wreck, and I have stomach aches. I was so nervous. And my husband was in a band, and so he'd play shows, and we'd go to, I remember it like it was yesterday, we went to Jailhouse and we had a show. And so I remember ordering the beer, but I wasn't really sure if I wanted to drink it because I didn't want to get sick. So I drank it, and I just remember that feeling. And not only did I not get sick, but I felt really good. And so I took it and ran. And I got pregnant with my son, and so of course I didn't drink. And then things didn't get any easier. My husband was in a band, and so he would have practices, and he was the only one that was married. He was the only one with the kid, but nobody else was. So instead of everyone else kind of conforming to our schedule, he just pretend, had, he had no schedule. And so I said, well, okay, well, I can get a hobby too. So I started drinking a lot. And it was pretty much on a daily basis. I got pregnant with my second child, and we were at some fundraiser, and I won 2 bottles of wine, and I was ecstatic. I put them on top of the refrigerator, and I told everyone that came over, you cannot touch that. That is mine. Because I was joking, as the epidural was coming out, they were going to put the wine in, and that was just... And so the day I got home from the hospital, game on, and I drank, and that's when it got really, really bad. I would drink on a daily basis. My husband was then on to me, and he didn't like that I drank so much. But I told him it was because his family never drank, and so I looked like an alcoholic, because anybody that drank to him would be an alcoholic. And I had my parents co-signing it, because my parents liked to drink. So as long as they were okay with it, I had somebody on my side, I was okay with it. And so so what I would do is she was probably 9 months old, and I would have to put her to sleep. So I would, don't come in, because you'll wake her up. So I would go in there with her and put her to sleep, and I'd have my wine. I'd buy the little 4-packs of wine, because those were easy to hide. I could shove them in my purse. I could shove them the bottles in the little nightstand drawer, because she never went on my side. And so I would then collect all my bottles and throw them in the trash can. And by this, it was a constant thing. And then I would slip up, and I would get caught, and there would be a fight, and he'd call my parents, and they were on my side, and so it was ugly. I don't remember any of this, because I, by then, was a blackout drinker. And so I was a closet drinker. And there was a guy that used to speak at the Alano Club, and I forget it. He was Glenn. And he would talk about, he was a secret agent drinker. He would drink in the closet, and I was like, that was me. I was a secret agent. But, and so then my husband would find the bottles in the trash can, and then it would be a huge fight, and so then I have to then take my bottles and then go to other trash cans around Tulare and dump them in there so he wouldn't find them. And then, so by this point, we're in therapy, and he's telling the counselor I drink too much, and I tell the counselor I'm not drinking too much, and I've got the counselor on my side, and so I'm so good. And so then I had gone somewhere, and I bought something, and we just left a counseling appointment, and how I wasn't a drinker. And there was a bottle of wine on the, on the receipt, and so he was mad because we just went and talked about all this, and here you go, we're out drinking again. And I said, oh no, the date on the receipt is wrong. There's a mess up on their computer or something, and he said, whatever. So then I decided, instead of catching on that this is a problem, I then make my purchases separate. I would buy what I needed, and I'd get a receipt for that, but then when I buy the wine, oh, I don't need a receipt. So I didn't have my trail. But then I would always slip up, and it got really bad. And it got to the point where my brother was engaged, and he came to visit, and I decided, well, I'm going to take her out and celebrate. And by that point, I was already drunk, and we went out, and I don't remember what we did. I don't remember what was said. I don't even know how we got home. But we were in a town where I only knew how to get home. So I hope to God I was not driving, but like I said, I don't know. Because I just remember leaving with her and waking up the next morning. And I had to do the facial read of, okay, are you pissed at me? Is everything okay? Because I blacked out constantly. And that didn't scare me, which scares me now, that it didn't scare me then. And so my mom was pissed. My mom wouldn't look at me. And I'm like, shit, I'm in trouble. So then my dad said, you should just stop drinking. I was like, okay. So I went to the therapist, and then it kind of came out that, well, maybe you do sort of have a problem. So, okay. So he said, I'm going to have you talk to this friend of mine. And I said, okay. I thought it was another counselor who had experience with alcohol, and it was a drug and alcohol counselor, and she said, okay, well, you need to come to the group meetings, you need to come to my meetings, you need to go to AA meetings. I was like, okay, wait a minute. I don't really have a problem, but I can see it getting that way, so I just want to come here and kind of nip it in the bud, but I don't really need all of this. I just need you and I have one-on-one so we get through this. She's like, okay, well, just come and try it out, and we'll see. And I was like, okay. So I went, and I made friends with some of these people, which was helpful because I don't trust very well and I don't make friends very well. And so I made friends with these people, and we kind of had our own little bonding group. And then I had about 60 days, and this good friend that I finally trusted kind of just disappeared and went back out. And at that same day, I had a huge blowout with my dad, and I was just like, you know what? I have 60 days. I know what to look for when there's a problem. So I'm going to go buy my little 4 packs of wine. I bought 2 because I sound like a lightweight, but I really didn't drink that much, and that really didn't mean. So I had my 2 4-packs because if I did it successfully, then I'd have my other pack to drink later. So what I did was I always put the baby asleep. I gave her, so she just needed a bottle, and so I give her a bottle. And then it was a toss-up. It was a toss-up whether I was going to make dinner, because most of the time my husband was gone. So I was either going to make dinner or I was going to drink. And my son, because I knew it wasn't a good idea to drink and then make dinner because I was a blackout, so I didn't want to burn the house down. So what I would do was I kind of feed my son. He was 3, I think. And then I'd lock everybody in my room, because I figured if I locked them in my room, they were safe. They couldn't get into anything. Shut the closet door, shut the bathroom door, and then I would just pass out. And so I did this last time, and I just remember I woke up, I sat up, and I was just throwing up all over myself. And I saw my son, he was staring right at me with this horrific look on his face, and he just kept asking me if I was okay. And I, you know, I'm fine, mommy's just sick. And he's like, oh, okay. But he was just horrified. And then my parents came over and saw what I had done. I said, okay, there's another box under there. You may want to get that and get rid of it. She's like, there's nothing left. There's one bottle left. So I drank like 7 of those little bottles, and it was bad. So then I had a sponsor at the time, and I called her, and I told her that I relapsed. And in my head, she's just supposed to say, oh, okay, well, we'll get you through this. Well, she said, you need to find another sponsor. So I was very upset, because that's not how it's supposed to go. And so, but I am very grateful that she did, because when I started going to these women's meetings, I saw my sponsor, well, the sponsor I have now there. And I grew up with this woman. I babysat her kids, and there she was. And I was like, okay, I'm going to ask my aunt to be my sponsor, and I'm going to be okay, because I know that she knows me, and, you know, and so I'm not going to get away with anything. So I called her, and I was like, can you be my sponsor? And she said, okay, you have to do this. And before I could get it out, like, and don't tell me you can't do it, because my kids are the same age as your kids were, and I had the same job as you, and if I was like, get it now. So I did. And my life now is just amazing. And it's only because of AA and the fellowship and these lovely women who are spread out, thank God, throughout, because I'm a nervous wreck. But because I didn't realize how miserable I was when I was drinking until I stopped drinking and looked back at my life. Yes, I have crappy days. The one thing that sucked for me in the beginning was that I was the only one that had to change. Nobody else had to change. I was the only one, and I was bitter because why do you get to say the same? And because, you know, I was in situations where that was triggered, and I had to get over that. And now I'm okay because I'm a better person now, and I don't really care that you didn't have to change. It took a while. My sponsor to talk about now how her husband's the greatest, and they never fight. And I'm like, that's bull. Because, oh my gosh, my husband and I fought a lot. But now I can say that I'm at that point where, you know, because I changed, everything around me changed. And we get along well now. He's not perfect. But, you know, when we fought, it was getting digs in, and who could make the other feel crappier, and we don't do that now. I can just say, this is how it is, and this is what I'm feeling, and he's okay with it, and he doesn't have to get his digs in as well. And I have three amazing children, and the fact that I did the things that I did and put them in the situations that I did just baffles me today, because I just can't imagine doing that to them now. And they are as cheesy and as gushy and mushy as it sounds, they are my world. And the fact that I am now able to be present, to go to everything that they do, to be supportive of them, it's just, and no one's embarrassed to have me around now, which is nice, because I did things like steal the cemetery marker from my dad's graveside because I was bitter and pissed, and I don't even remember doing it. I woke up the next morning and the little marker was in my car with a bunch of his flowers, so I had to go back and give it back. And it was my birthday, and there were some friends that were playing the show, and they had a friend a couple months before, and they were like, oh, it's also a birthday, let's sing happy birthday. And so I felt I deserved the same thing. So I was really drunk, and I would get up, and I was like, hey, it's my birthday, sing happy birthday to me. And my sister-in-law would pull me back down, and I'd get back up, and it was bad, and my shirt was on backwards and inside out. And, you know, and it's funny because we'll go to things now, and my brother-in-law will tell me, just out of nowhere, like, obviously I didn't do get sober for everyone to be like, oh, good talk. But my brother-in-law will tell me out of nowhere when I don't expect. He's like, I'm so glad you're not drinking anymore. And I'm like, oh, there we go. That is awesome. And, you know, my husband appreciates that I don't drink anymore. I don't embarrass him. He doesn't have to leave me where I was, kind of thing. And I'm just so appreciative of it. And I'm just so grateful. And, you know, when your sponsor tells you, hey, I'm speaking on the 11th, I'm never here. But I am grateful. I need to do this, because that's part of being sober, is to just get right outside of that comfort zone and get through it and be like, yeah, check. And done for that. But so anyway, thank you. And I think, thank God, my 10 minutes. Thank you.
The lovely city of Corpus.
I can't read the button.
I'm Rayanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, Rick, for asking me to share my story. It is, I used to not think it was a privilege, but it actually is a privilege to speak. Still nervous. And I kept telling Sammy, don't worry about it, you'll be fine. And all of a sudden my stomach's going, arrrr. Well, let's see. I am from Corcoran. I wasn't originally. I'm from Fresno. I was born and raised there to two wonderful parents, one alcoholic and one codependent. May have been an alcoholic, but not sure. And I grew up in an alcoholic home, so there was a lot of chaos all the time. And I was the third child. I have two older brothers, and I was the one that made sure everything in the house was okay. And I didn't like the fighting that went on. I always, if I was good, mom and dad wouldn't fight. That's how I grew up. And from really early on, before I even drank, I was the only girl, and daddy's a little girl, and I can manipulate him, and I did. And I continued to manipulate him for a long time. Alcohol was never allowed in our house, so I never saw anybody drink normal. My dad was a binge drinker, and all I would know is my dad would go out of town, and the next thing is all his clothes would be thrown out on the front lawn or in the garage. So I'd be, you know, just this little kid picking it all up and going, "Mom, why are you so mean?" And as a result of that, I was really, really mean to my mom. I didn't understand, you know, alcoholism. I didn't understand my dad was an alcoholic. You know, I was told that he was allergic to alcohol, just like people are allergic to, you know, strawberries or lobster, you know, shellfish, and they, you know, break out in hives. Well, he would break out in jail. And I didn't get it. And so I always blamed my mom for years, thinking it was all her fault. And so by the time I was 12, 13, I don't know because my birthday is in the summer, but I remember that was the summer I changed. And I found alcohol and I loved it. Now, I used to drink, you know, like my grandpa's Lucky when they had the puzzles on the thing. I would drink those or, you know, pop his Coors and have a sip. But, you know, the first time I got drunk, I was staying the night at a girlfriend's house where, you know, her parents thought we were staying at my house and all that kind of story. And so we were a bunch of girls there with no parents. And the kids across the street, they were high school kids, they were seniors, and they told us we could go over there and drink with them. And so, okay, let's go. And I drank. And they were drinking this stuff out of bottles, which I knew was alcohol, duh. But they had these little shots, and they said, "Do you want one?" I said, "Well, yeah." So, you know, I drank one or two or three. Not sure how many I drank, but I know I blacked out that night. And I remember bits and pieces of it, of walking down the street pretending I was a soldier. And, you know, and then, you know, I woke up the next morning and I felt really, really bad. And I had a track meet that day. It was a Saturday morning and it was a big track meet and I didn't do very well. And my dad was like looking at me, he's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm just really tired. We stayed up really late. And, I mean, like he couldn't smell it on me. And so that started it. And I drank like that. I drank and drank and drank until I passed out. And I used to call that falling asleep. But alcohol took away all those feelings of less than, of not being a part of. You know, living in an alcoholic home, growing up in one, I always felt different. You know, everybody else had the best family. You know, they were the Cleavers. And it was just chaotic. And I never had any sense of security. Everyone was always better than me. And I just never felt right. But in our household, if you dressed right and you, you know, drove the right car, had the right friends, you were okay because it was all about the appearance. So that's how I dealt with it, is, you know, look good and you'll be fine. And there was just hell going on inside me. And, you know, when I took that first drink, I knew that that's what I wanted. I loved it. And, you know, alcohol took me out of myself. I didn't have to feel. I didn't have to be that, you know, that insecure kid that I really was. And even though, you know, most people say that I'm not afraid to get up and speak and stuff, I am. You know, I'm just pretending right now you're all fourth graders. And so don't be throwing anything. And, you know, but I was. You know, I never felt like I belonged. And I had a lot of friends. But I just didn't feel like I belonged. And, you know, through high school, it was, I went to Catholic schools for 12 years. And I was going to be a nun up until about third grade. And then, you know, in high school, it was just like the Friday, Saturday night thing. I couldn't drink on Sundays for the longest time. I don't know why, but I thought Catholics really didn't drink on Sundays. So I wouldn't drink on Sundays. Well, my senior year, we were at a party and I drank, and then I realized that, well, duh, that's when the priests really drink are on Sundays. So I got over that, and it was, you know, in college it was Monday night. I joined a sorority and it was Monday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. and probably Sunday. And how I got through college, I have no idea, but I did. But back in high school, you know, growing up, I did everything to please my parents. I always wanted my dad's attention. I always felt, it was my perception, that he always gave the attention to my brothers. That, you know, he'd go golfing with them, and he'd do this and coach their team or do this and that. And then he never came to, you know, my dance recitals. And I danced for 15 years. I had, you know, lots of pictures of me and my mom, you know, at those recitals, and none of him. And I always just felt like I was, you know, I wasn't important enough. But, you know, he always was with my brothers. And that, you know, it hasn't been until, I don't know, a few years ago, really, that I just don't really feel that anymore. I know it was BS. But anyways, in high school, though, I will tell one story in high school. I went to Catholic school. We drank before the football games, and I was a cheerleader. We were supposed to. Brother Warren was drunk, and he was our advisor. And I may have drank with the brothers inside their house, you know. They had a keg on tap. They invited us. But, you know, my senior year in religion class, we had this thing. A friend bet me that I wouldn't drink for 30 days. And why? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I was drinking too much. And I said, sure, okay. So we had, you know, the tally marks, and we were racing, and it was, I got a 12-pack, my own 12-pack. You see, I was really greedy when I drank. I wanted to look like a lady and drink like a lady, but I was a pig. And you were not going to drink my alcohol. And my friends was like, sure, 6-pack? Like four of them, four girls. I'm like, no, get me the 12 pack. And then they'd want me, oh, can I have a no, you know? And I was like that with other things too, outside of shoes too. And but the deal was is that I would get my own 12 pack, and I won. And so that was the night that we had more than beer. And thought it would be really funny to streak when the pizza guy came. So I took a Coors Light can, put it over my head, or the box, put it over my head, and ran in front of the pizza guy and went, ah! And he just stood there. And that pissed me off. So I drank more. And then I don't remember the rest of the night. But, you know, I was a blackout drinker, and I don't remember. And I remember having to look at my friends' faces or pretend that I didn't really black out, and that they were, I kind of like, okay, what happened? And I kind of remember some of it, because I kind of go in and out. But, you know, most of the time I blacked out. And, you know, people were talking one time about, oh, yeah, I drank in Bakersfield. I goes, I don't know if I drank in Bakersfield. Because I would end up sometimes in weird places. I know I ended up in San Luis one time. And with a toothbrush and a bathing suit. I left the party. I remember them wanting to go, but I didn't know I actually went. So I woke up the next morning. But in college, I joined a sorority because I thought, all right, now I've got 40 women. I'm going to live with these 40 women. One of them is going to be my friend, you know. And one more time, you know, that feeling of being different, of, you know, just not being quite enough hit me again. And we'd be sitting in a circle, and I would feel like I was physically removed from them. And it's a weird feeling, like I just was not there. And so I drank. And but I was not the worst one in that house. We had a girl that got caught, you know, and she had to go to AA. And I kind of knew about AA. Yeah, I kind of knew about AA because by this time I found out my dad was an alcoholic. I was 17 years old when I really found out he was an alcoholic. I went on a trip with him, and they almost didn't let him on the airplane, and it was terrible. But anyways, yeah. But I just never got caught, you know. All growing up, when I moved back to my parents' house and stuff, they my brothers were so loud and obnoxious when they came in. They hit the walls. They were, you know, MS and all this kind of stuff. And I came in quietly, you know. And well, my friends, everybody always spent the night at our house. I had the cool parents. Don't ask me why. My friends loved my parents, could talk to them about anything, but I couldn't. And so everybody always spent the night at our house, and they'd be throwing up in the bathroom, and my mom would come out and say, Gina, you did it again. You know, and I'd be in bed putting my foot down going, please, Vincent, stop, stop. Or just I'd be out, you know, fully clothed. And I just never got caught. And in fact, when I went to rehab, I have a middle brother that he and I always competed. Always competed. He's 2 years older than me, and we were it's just the way we were raised. And, you know, I don't blame my parents. They did the best they could, you know, from how they were raised and everything, you know. I blamed them. Well, let me tell you, I blamed them a long time. You know, I wouldn't have been an alcoholic if it wasn't for them, and you'd drink too if you had those parents. And, but my middle brother, we just always competed. Always. It was one thing after another. He'd get this, I wanted that. I mean, it was terrible. And so, you know, he got into alcohol, I got into alcohol. He got into drugs, I got into drugs. So I copied everything he did, they said. And so when I got sober, he had gotten sober about 8 years prior to me, they said, oh, she's just doing it for attention. I'm like, okay. And so they wouldn't believe it. And really, my mom later told me it was because she didn't want another child to be an alcoholic. You know, 2 out of 3 isn't bad, you know. But let me go back to college. College was fun. It really was. I drank a lot. I drank a lot at the fraternities. I loved the way they drank. They drank like me. They drank a lot. They wanted to have fun and party. And, you know, a lot of sorority girls, they just wanted to stay and study or watch TV, and that just was not me. And I had this, I'm really lucky. I don't know, God has always been on my shoulder watching over me because my middle brother, all his friends, there was a rule that they weren't allowed to date me, his friends. And they always watched out. So I always got home safely, no matter what. And I mean, there were times, a lot of times, I don't remember how I got home. And someone said, oh, so-and-so brought you home, carried you upstairs. I'm like, oh, you know. And so, you know, I was really, because there could have been a lot I could have been taken advantage of. Well, I could have not known it, but, you know. But, you know, really terrible stuff. And I'm just really grateful that that, you know, didn't happen to me. But one story in college, this is embarrassing. I was a little sister of a fraternity house. And they had this fundraiser that how many shots of beer you can drink in an hour. So they were going out and getting pledges, and I said, okay, well, I can probably, 10 shots of beer in an hour. That sounds reasonable. So I got people, you know, giving me a dime, a quarter, a dollar, and, this is going to be cool. So there's about 30 girls there, and I was the first one there, and I liked beer. And the girl, the kid was on the other side of the room, and they said, go, and I just remember taking the little shot and just dipping it into the pitcher, and just, you know, I had like 10 shots the first minute. And then I remember them moving the keg next to me, and I didn't remember a lot. I do remember my my big brother in the fraternity, who's actually related to me now, taking me outside because I said, I want to drink more, but I'm full. And he stuck his finger down my throat, and I just threw up beer. And I could never, ever get sick. I have no reflex. I can't get sick. I just gag and turn blue and pass out. You know, but I threw up that night, all beer, and I went back in and drank. And I ended up drinking 121 shots in an hour. That's 11 beers in an hour for someone, you know, 5 foot. That's a lot. And that was the only time I had like a 2-day hangover. And I was so embarrassed to, you know, have to go collect that money. I just kind of hid out. And I was like, I am not doing it. And then my name is still on the plaque, you know. They changed the rules, though. You cannot get up from the table. You know, I think back now, I could have gotten alcohol poisoning, you know. And I think, yeah, my oldest brother took me home. I was living off campus. He took me home that night, and because he was kind of scared, you know, because I had drank so much. But, you know, my daughter's at Fresno State right now, and she's been going over to the AGR house, which her dad is an AGR. like, please don't go to the SAE house and see my name. That's too embarrassing. Oh, well. You know what? Growing up also, I was always told I was going to be this person. You're going to, you know, you're like our last hope brand. You're the only one who did good in school because I did everything they told me to do. And I was going to go to law school. I actually did go to law school, or tried to. And I graduated from Fresno State. I don't know how I did. I did. And, of course, I had a criminology degree, and that was easy. But I went to law school, and I lasted a month. I knew it was, before I even applied to law school, I knew I did not want to be a lawyer, but I always did what someone told me to do. I had no idea who I was because, you know, everybody always told me, you talk this way, you think this way, you act this way. You know, it's like 11 years old, my mom gave me Emily Post's book of etiquette. And I can set a table 10 different ways, like a lot of good that does me now, because I don't even cook anymore. But, you know, it was always, you know, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And I thought, heck, being a lawyer, great, I'll make lots of money and, you know, I'll have control. And, well, I got there and hated it, just hated it. And at the same time, my oldest brother was in dental school in Marquette, and my parents had gone to Marquette with him to, you know, get an apartment and all that stuff. And my mind told me, he's more important. You're just going to law school. It's not that big of a deal. He's more important. So I already had that chip on my shoulder. And, you know, I get there and I'm sitting in class and they just drill you. And I'm not smart enough. I just can't figure this out. I can't do it. And I want to die. I mean, I want to die because in my family, you're not a quitter. You started something, you finished it. And, you know, I played on boys' baseball team, and I'd get beamed, and I just would, like, just turn because, you know, I want to walk off. I want to cry. I'm a girl, you know. And I get that look from my dad, and I just turn around and, oh, you know. And you don't quit no matter what. So I couldn't quit law school. I mean, at that point, I mean, this is how bad it had gotten. It was I had rather die than quit law school than tell my dad I was going to quit. And so I called them one night and I said, I told my dad, they were in Wisconsin, and I said, is that where Marquette is? Yeah. I said, I don't like law school, I'm dropping out. And I heard, he says he didn't say this, but I know he did. I heard, don't quit, where you're not a quitter, give it a month, blah, 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 blah. That's all I heard. And a few minutes later, my mom got on the phone, and I hadn't said anything to her, and she said, nothing is worth taking your life. And how she knew that, I don't know, because that was the first time that I really thought, you know what, I want out. I don't want to do this. I don't want to let anybody down. I want out. And that was a chicken. And so the next day, I went to the dean and dropped out, and I went and did my most three favorite things. I went to the state fair. I sat on the horses, smoked cigarettes, and drank beer all day long. And it was fun. And I ran out of money. So and then, you know, us alcoholics, black and white, I came to all of a sudden and said, oh my God, I just dropped out of law school. What am I going to do the rest of my life? I better know now. Because I always had a backup plan. This time I didn't have a backup plan. And now I'm a loser because I just dropped out of law school and I had nothing to do. College graduate, you know, I mean, it's going through my mind. And this guy I was dating at the time, I called him, and he said, well, come home. I said, I can't. I'm too drunk. Take the train. Okay. So I got a ride to the train, you know, and try to sober up before you get home. Well, yeah, all right. So I drank all the way home, too, from Sacramento to Sacramento or Fresno. And he picked me up, and he said, I said, what am I going to do? I got something to do. I need a job. As if my parents would just, you know, throw me out. And he goes, well, why don't you become a teacher? And I wanted to kill that SOB, and instead I married him. And actually, it was up until this last year. Now, actually, I'm glad I did that. Well, the teachers in my family were fat, dowdy, and wore polyester. And they were mean, and so I did not like that. And then I grew up with the nuns, so I was always going to hell. Because I was that kid in class that drove every teacher nuts. And that's payback. And so I get my computer credential and I moved to Corcoran. Now, Fresno's not really big, but Corcoran's like hitting a brick wall. And even though I have what? That's right, she's from there. She was raised there. And so are you, Dave. in high school, you know, I had a lot of friends. I got, you know, most likely to be remembered. I don't know if that was good or bad, but, you know, and craziest driver. Mm. I don't have road rage, though. Or so many people. Anyway, I'm such a my head was thinking this. Okay, I'm moving to a new town, and I've got new people now, so I can start over again. So I, you know, moved to Corcoran, and it didn't take very long before I felt, you know, less than, didn't part of, and it was all, you know, they're David's friends, they're only being nice to me because they have to, and I, you know, poor me type thing. And there's kind of a joke, or I always heard in Corcoran that you either have a really good marriage or you drink, and so I drank. And, you know, for 5 years, I was miserable down there, and that's when my drinking really got bad. And the thing is that people can't believe, you know, my husband really doesn't drink anymore, but I would have never dated him if he didn't drink like me or did things like me. He did. At one time, he was. So he's not an angel. And for the record. And but somewhere when we started having kids, he grew up. And he doesn't have the disease. You know, I have the disease on both sides of my family. We started having kids. I had my son, and I decided to take a year off from school because I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. And if any of you know me, I can't sit still for more than 5 minutes. And so that didn't last very long. So I started playing golf again. Well, I was playing Tuesday. Well, then it was Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then it was Tuesdays, Thursdays, you know, Saturdays and Sundays. And then it was I was getting in trouble at the golf course. I was drinking too much. And, yeah. So it was cheaper for me to go back to work. I would make money that way. And plus I was bored. And so, My son, I drove drunk with him. I rode a bike drunk with him lots of times. I figured, you know, if I was on a bike, it wasn't as bad. But then we had my daughter. And that's when I knew there was a problem, but I wasn't going to. Actually, I knew there was a problem long before. But, you know, I wasn't like my dad, and I wasn't like my brother. And I sat in AA rooms for 8 years at, you know, the All Welcome Speaker meeting in Fresno, and I'd listen to everybody's story, and I could identify with, you know, the war stories and their drunk logs. But as soon as people got sober or talked about sobriety, I was done. You know, I didn't want to hear what you had to say, but that seed had been planted, and I knew. And so after I had my daughter, I was just the low, just really low. I didn't know how to be a mom. I didn't know how to be a wife, and I didn't want to. You know, now I have these two kids, and, you know, I thought it was more important for me to find my best friend, her husband. So we would go to places like Lakeside Bar, and off of Kansas? Yeah, you know, or drink with Bill. You know, I was drinking in places that made me feel better. And I did that in college, too, or a couple of dives that I'd go to because it made me feel better. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that I was just like anybody else. I just had different clothes on. But I thought it was better. But in reality, I was just as bad. And I really kind of knew that. But, you know, I didn't like the pressure. I didn't know how to be a mom. I just didn't know how to do it. So the easiest thing is not to do it. And at this point, you know, my husband was kind of getting, he was getting mad. You know, he had to pick me up at the pizza parlor once in a while. Well, quite a bit. Sometimes I don't remember. But that was, you know, Corcoran isn't that big of a town, but on Thursday nights or Tuesdays, sometimes Mondays. Anyway, people would play volleyball, and then we'd go down to the pizza parlor and drink beer and drink beer. And I was going down for two beers. Well, That was a couple hours later, and it was never two beers. And, you know, I couldn't drive home, or, I rode my bike down there, and, yeah. So, and I was starting to get those looks, and that look was not, that just made me feel even worse. And it got to the point where when I used to cook dinner, I would make dinner. We used to launch the wine of the month club. We always had lots of wine. We had a refrigerator just full of wine. And I can't say I was a wine snob because I didn't really give a shit. You know, I just drank it, you know, and didn't know it all tasted good to me. And this smells real good. Let's drink it. And Stephanie was there for a couple of those parties. But what I would do is I would make dinner and open a bottle of wine, drink a glass, and then at dinner have a glass, and then he'd drink not even a whole glass. And then he'd go to bed because he got up so early, and I'd finish off that bottle, go outside, get another one, drink it down to where I thought it would be, take that bottle, throw it out in the garbage. And he never knew I did that, and I did that for a long time. And he didn't even know how the wine was going. When I got sober, I mean, I was giving that stuff out. So like, here, take this. Oh, this is really nice. I'm sharing it. You know, just never home, and I was just not happy. Driving with the kids drunk, and if I wasn't drunk, I was thinking about getting drunk. You know, I was working. I was still functional. I probably had a hangover, but I was working. I showed up to work. I didn't, call in sick because I was sick. I always showed up. I did the best that I could. I probably wasn't very nice to the kids, but but I'll tell you what, that 3:15, I was out of there, and I was thinking, okay, who's gonna babysit my kids so I can drink? And she was. And can they stay at the babysitter's longer so I can drink? But if he catches me drinking, not that he really could catch me drinking, it wasn't about that yet. It was just like, do you always have to go out with your friends, And I hid that too coming in. He'd be asleep, and I would just pass out. It got to the point, though, that let me back up. 8 years before I got sober, my dad and brother got sober. And now my dad has been trying to get sober. I thought it was the year I was born in 65, but he told me it was the early 60s. And I would sit in those meetings in Fresno and, listen, and that seed had been planted. And I had been seeing a therapist. You know when you go through, my brother went through a rehab, and you go through and every child or every person in the family gets named something. Well, I was named something, and everybody knew that I had an eating disorder. I mean, it was very apparent. And so I was going to this therapist, and finally after a year of convincing me that the world would go on without me, that I needed to go to this rehab for 30 days, I went. But I knew going down there that it was more than just that, and that if I wanted any chance at life, that I had to come clean with everything. And by the end of my drinking, I better tell the last drunk story, huh? I'll get caught and get in trouble. My last drunk, which I knew it would probably be my last drunk, I was down at the pizza parlor, and I remember drinking. There was a lot of people there at one time, and I remember kind of coming through. I looked over. My son was making, he's 3 years old, he was making pizza boxes with the owner. And then I looked up, and I was drinking with the town drunks. And I knew things had gotten bad when I was drinking with the two town drunks. And how could that happen to me, And next thing I know, I kept drinking, though. Next thing I know is I woke up, and I was just shaking. I was starting to get DTs, and I was just shaking. And I said, oh, God, and I ran into Philip's room, and everything was okay. He was there, nothing on him. I ran out to the car. It was parked pretty good, too. And I don't know if I drove it home. And then, I looked at me, and I was just shaking. I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't do it. And so many times up to that point, I just wanted to die. I'm like, God, just take me. I cannot do this anymore. These kids would be better off without me. And, through another disease, I was actually killing myself slowly. And it's a wonder that I didn't do more damage to myself than I did. And so when I got down to that eating disorders hospital, I just came clean with everything. And, you know, I went in as the anorexic bulimic, and I came out an alcoholic. And it kicked me out after 2 weeks because they didn't think I was bad enough. Well, I was afraid to tell them that, you know, I really did want to die, and one time I actually had a plan to commit suicide, because I was afraid they were going to take me in a straitjacket, and I watched way too many movies. And so I lied, and so they kicked me out. Now, if I was in an alcohol treatment center, they would have kept me, but I guess I wasn't bad enough. So anyways, I get out, and I remember driving back home, and I went to a meeting in Tulare, and it was a candlelight meeting. I can't remember, Saturday night or Sunday night, I'm barbarous. The Saturday night, yeah. And there was a gentleman there that had a business in Corcoran that I kind of knew, and there was another very loud man there that scared me. And, and I just knew that I needed to stay in meetings. And and I thought, you know what? Okay, I can do this meeting thing, but I want to go where I'm comfortable. So I went to Fresno. And my first 2 years of sobriety, I went to the Friday night meeting at the Village Group every Friday night. And I was going to meetings in Visalia and in Tulare, but I felt really comfortable there. I felt safe there. I knew those people, and they weren't going to lie to me, and they welcomed me. You know, I was always Mark's little sister or Ray's daughter. But when I became an alcoholic, I was Rayanne. And that's what I really liked about them, is I was no longer the little sister. And for once, I felt like, you know, I was me, and you know, I loved them, and they helped me, really helped me. And, you know, my dad told me to read the big book, and I said, it's boring, and he goes, keep reading it. And he, you know, I got a sponsor. He goes, you know, did you talk to your sponsor? It's like, you know, 3 weeks into sobriety, I was back a week, I better get a sponsor, because I do as I'm told. And I go, yeah, but she hasn't called me yet. He goes, she's not going, stupid. I go, oh. So within a couple of weeks, it worked out, and I got this other sponsor, and I still have her, and I call her the step Nazi, and she wears combat boots. And I absolutely love her. She is what I needed. She can hear in my voice if I'm lying, if I'm bullshitting, or, you know, she just knows me so well. And, you know, everyone says always, you know, it's a program of suggestion. No, she doesn't suggest. She tells me. She says, you can live in pain or you can just do this. And I found that when I listen to her, I'm not in pain, but I don't always want to listen. Because just one time I might be right, you know. The overachiever that I am, I was going to have those steps done within 30 days, all 12 of them, and I'd be done. And I knew you didn't graduate from, you know, AA, but, you know, I was going to have them done, put it behind me, and I could go on with life. And that didn't happen. And she had to slow me down, and, you know, I was really scared about the four steps that I was like, I'm not telling someone. But, you know, I had gotten a relationship with her and a trust, and I had, you know, found my higher power again and had that trust, and I just, you know, I just jumped in and did it. And I remember her telling me, hey, is this everything? And I said, yeah. And I was holding back something. I said, yeah, it is. She goes, are you sure this is everything? Yep, it's everything. Well, it wasn't. And about 3 years after that, this issue came up, and it just threw me for a loop. And so I had to go back to her and say, okay, let's come out. And that was okay. I wasn't ready back then. And come to find out, it happened exactly when it was supposed to. And after I, you know, worked through that, I was sitting in my dad's office, and this ex-boyfriend comes through the door. And it was about him, and he was very, very abusive. I was a freshman in high school, and he was just, it was horrible. And I hated him. And at one time, my dad was going to go kill him. And he walks through the door, and I just, like, freaked. Like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? There he is. and he came in with someone else who was out of prison or jail or somewhere, and he was, I don't know, doing some work. So I went into my dad's office, shut the door, and called my sponsor. And I said, he's here, he's here. She goes, who's what? What are you talking about, you know? And I told her, and she says, just keep reading. You'll be okay, you'll be okay. And all of a sudden it clicked with me. I have nothing to be afraid of. I said, I'll call you later. And so, I mean, we said a few things. And I walked out there, and I walked right up to him, and I started talking to him. And we were kind of just joking around and whatnot. And he said something about being in high school and how we used to drink a lot or doing something about that. That I was sober now. And he goes, yeah, if we were still together, we'd still be drinking. I said, no, I'd be dead. And he goes, yeah, you're right. And so I took him outside, and, you know, I made amends to him, and he made amends to me, and, you know, that power was taken away, that fear, and, you know, I don't hate him anymore. And that was a true miracle for me that could happen, because I said I would never talk to him again, and it was ugly. But because of this program and working each step, you know, having a good sponsor, you know, I've been able to do so much. And I know for me, it's always about me, but, you know, it's not about me. When I'm thinking about the program, when I'm working the program, I'm not thinking about myself. If I'm helping somebody else, I'm not thinking about myself. And, you know, I can switch like that, you know, from one side to another really quick. But, you know, I learned so much. I learned how to pray. You know, I went to 12 years of Catholic school. I know how to pray. I know every rope prayer there is, and but I didn't know how to pray. So about 3 months sober, I asked my sponsor, how do you pray? I really want to know. And she told me, and it's that easy? You know, because I was just not feeling it. And, you know, there was a lot of things that I had to ask her that I didn't understand. I remember one of the first days she told me to open up the big book. First time I met with her, and I opened up the big book, and she goes, what's on the cover? I said, nothing. She goes, exactly, you know nothing. Oh. That's the kind of sponsor I have, yeah. And but it's what I needed. I still need her. And, you know, and I'd whine that I, you know, oh, no one wants me to sponsor him. You know, like 3-4 years sober, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I said, well, maybe you don't have to offer anything. Oh, that hurt. And she said that to me not too long ago, too. And and then I sponsored people, and then it was like, oh, my gosh, you know, I am responsible for this person now. And, well, the first one kept going out. She finally died, you know, but it was a really good lesson for me. That wasn't you. You're just a pain. But to know that, you know, I had to learn the lessons that they may have gone out, but I'm still sober, and that's really what counts. And I learned that, you know, sponsorship isn't just one way. It's a two-way thing. And if it's not, it's not sponsorship. And I was told if you don't know your sponsor's number, you don't know your sponsor. And now with phones like we have, I still know her number. But you know, she told me to get into service, and so I got into service, you know, making coffee. I was secretary at meetings, you know, gave people rides, did H&I work. And I remember one time I went out to Corcoran Prison, you know, all 5 feet of me, and with an ex-con and a big Barbara. And I was so scared going out there, and actually it was fine, you know. It was a bunch of scary men. It was fine, and then I got those doors closed afterwards. I said, I'm done. I'm not going out there anymore. But it was a good experience for me. I didn't think I could relate to being in prison, you know. And I've learned over the years that, you know, I was a lying, cheat, and a thief. And I did a lot of the things that those people did. I just never got caught. Is what it came to. You know, I got out of a DUI. I didn't get arrested. I got out of it. I passed the sobriety test. I don't know how I did it, But right in front of, right on Shaw and Willikers parking lot, if you know where that is. And I mean, two cop cars, and I'm sitting there. And the only reason why I was driving is because the guy I was with, one of my brother's friends, had already had two DUIs. So he made me drive. It was 4th of July, and I passed it. In fact, he made me do the alphabet, and I start doing the Greek alphabet, alpha, beta, gamma, delta. I'm like, oh, crap, you know? So he probably thought I wasn't drunk then or something. So he tells me, I was 20, and he told me to go inside Willikers and have a cup of coffee. Yeah, that's what I did. I went in there and had more shots and then realized I had to drive home, and he wasn't going to drive, so I had to drive. And, you know, I got out of the DUI. I didn't lose a job. I didn't lose anything. What I lost was myself. You know, I was always trying to capture that buzz, that feeling that Stephanie was talking about, that where you felt good, you felt okay. Alcohol made me feel okay when I could remember it. You know, I could be whoever I wanted with alcohol. You know, I didn't have to be that little sister. I didn't have to be that daughter. I was tall. I was tall, smart, and had big boobs. That's who I was. You know? And then I woke up. And, you know, but it took away that pain and the shame because, you know, alcohol, I'm not going to drink, but I'm miserable, so I'm going to drink, and then I do crap, and so I got shame, and it just goes on and on and on, and it took it away. But, you know, being sober, I don't feel like that anymore, you know. And I've had some things happen to me recently, and you know, a couple years ago, no, so 6 years ago, my grandmother died, and I was very, very close to my grandmother, and she was probably the most spiritual person I had ever met. And she wasn't an alcoholic. She was just this good Catholic woman, and she had more pain and tragedy in her life, and she was always happy, always had that spark in her eye, and, you know, loved people, loved life. And I lost her, and it was really hard. And I remember someone in the program saying how when their mother had died, how they crawled up in bed when they were dying with her and held her. And I did that with my grandma, and my mom was sitting there like, oh, my God, why are you doing that? And you're going to hurt her. And my brother looks at her like, hello, she's almost dead. She can't hurt her, you know. And everybody left the room, and it was just really, really cool. And then 6 months ago, I lost my mom, and it was really tough. And, you know, my mom and I hated her for the longest time, you know, because I had to be that perfect girl. You know, I always thought I had to be, and, well, she told me I had to be, too. But, you know, over the years, you know, I accepted my mom for who she was, and it was hard. And I'd go through times where I was okay with it, and then it was tough. Because we're a sick family, and we have that triangle going on. So my mom would call me and tell me about this brother, and then she'd tell me, you know, all that junk. And, you know, I just quit participating in that. And so then I was like Miss AA, and because, of course, they were all drinking, and, you know, or they weren't drinking, but they were dry drunk. And, you know, my mom's last 3 years, I was really able to get close to her and really get to know her. And I was able to crawl up with my mom when she was dying, and it was so peaceful. And I took the role on in my family because I do really good under crisis situations. I don't freak out as afterwards I do. And, you know, I could handle this and that, and my dad was a mess, and my brothers were useless. And so they basically put me in charge, and I was there the whole time, and because they didn't want to stay there. It was too scary and whatnot. And so they gave me permission, and I'm really good at organizing. So, you know, I did everything, and I took on that role, and I didn't have to feel because I was in charge, and I liked to be in charge. And I forgot what it felt like to be in charge like that, and so that was good. And, but with that came the chaos and the not wanting to feel. And instead of getting closer to the program, I was doing things that I wouldn't have to feel. Well, maybe this will work. Well, maybe this will work, you know. And just not wanting to be the perfect kid. Just wanting to not do the right thing for once. So, you know, I get a tattoo. And my husband was not too happy about that. And, you know, just stuff that is before I would have never done because I wasn't I wasn't willing to, you know, pay the price. But it was I hit an emotional bottom in sobriety, and I never knew what that was. And I do now. And I'm back up on the climb. And I never felt I lost my connection with God, my higher power, that I didn't feel like he was listening. I didn't feel like I used to feel. It was just like, okay, God, I know you're there and I'm praying to you, but you're just not listening, or I'm just not doing what you're saying. And you know, now I have that connection back, and it feels good. And, you know, I can, you know, part of what I've done for 17 years, or a little over 17 years, you know, I've done practically almost every day. And, you know, I get up in the morning and I the first thing I do not hit my knees. I don't. I take a shower. I have a cup of coffee first. You know, it's when I, you know, a little while later, I do my prayer and daily meditation. And then I usually talk to at least one person in the program. And I've done that for years. And, you know, I was noticing I just was going through the motions. Just like, okay, Reda, what did it mean? I couldn't even tell you what it meant. And so finally, you know, I was enough. Enough of that, because I was really not wanting to feel anymore. And that really scared me. And it wasn't about drinking, but I just didn't know what was going to happen. So one more time, you know, I went back to the basics. That's when my sponsor told me that someone had wanted me to sponsor them, and she said, no, this wouldn't be a good time. You have nothing to offer. That hurt, but she was right, because I needed to get back to the basics, you know, and I have. And then a couple weeks ago, someone asked me to sponsor, and I go, can I now? And she goes, yes, I think you can now. I still have to get her permission. Because, you know, I don't always think right. You know, I know how to be a drunk. I know how to drink. I know how to screw up my life. But I don't always know how to stay sober. And I need you guys to help me keep sober. You know, and you've never let me down. You know, when I was going through this craziness, you know, I would get phone calls all the time. I hear, you know, people text me or leaving me a message, you know, I'm praying for you. You're going to be okay. Because I thought I was the only one going through this. I didn't think anybody with time ever went through this. Until I finally said something, and then I found out, oh, everybody has. You know, but I'm still, you know, one more time, the only one. I'm unique. And, you know, today is good. Today is really good. I'm getting back to living one day at a time. You know, my dad's drinking again, and my brother's drinking again, and I don't want to say it's okay. It's not okay, but it is. It's, no, I've let it go. I've let it go. It's none of my business. And the reason why I get so mad is because I'm so afraid they're going to die of alcohol. They're going to die an alcoholic death. That's what scares me, is losing them. And that I've got to let them do what they need to do. And my dad called me this morning and told me he had a date last night. And a couple weeks ago, I freaked out over something because he wanted to bring a lady friend, a friend though, to my daughter had, whatever, had, her team had a fundraiser, and I lost it. I mean, I'm boohooing to my father, you know, but I didn't let my dad know any of this, because, you know, I don't break down in front of him. He thinks I'm so strong. My whole family thinks I'm so strong. They think I'm the nicest person. They have no idea. I called my dad, and I said, you know what, after talking for at least an hour to people, this wouldn't be a good time. And I thought, I just can't do that. That's just not right. And, you know, thinking about it, you know, he's lonesome. It's none of my business. It really is none of my business. Well, he told me last night he had a lady friend to go see this concert, and he loved it, and he had a really good time. And, in fact, the lady is a friend of mine's mother. And, you know, I was okay with it. You know, that's growth for me, because it's none of my business. You know, if my dad has the right to be happy. I just wish he was sober and happy. But you know what? I don't get to control the world today, and thank God. And, you know, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know where I'd be. You know, I really don't. And this program has given me more than I've ever dreamed of. I didn't think I could have what I have, or get back what I have, You know, and I'm not talking about the material things. I'm talking about the serenity, the peace, the balance. I always wanted balance in my life, and I was always off kilter, you know. And, you know, I find balance here, and I find true friendship. And I have people here that really love me. You know, and I've got a lot of love to give to people. There's so much, unconditional. And, you know, I was told here not everybody was going to like me, and that just about killed me, too, because, you know, I wanted everybody to like me, but, you know, I don't like some of you. You know, I love you, but I don't like you. No, but I love you. But, you know, and that's okay. That's reality. But, you know, I do my best to get along with people and not to take their inventory or, you know, or judge. But, when I'm, like I said, when I'm thinking about myself, I am not working a program. And, you know, I firmly believe this, that what kept me sober yesterday kept me sober yesterday. And what keeps me sober today is prayer and meditation, talking to other people, getting into service. You know, sometimes I'll even read from the big book that I have to start all over every single day. That's how it works for me. It's a day-by-day program. And if I start thinking, you know, a year from now, 6 months from now, and I have to plan some stuff, but if I start thinking about that, then I'm lost, and then I lose it, and I can't stay in the moment, and I miss it. And, I don't want to miss anymore. You know, I've missed enough in life, I don't want to miss anymore. And with that, thanks for letting me share.